Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Peace and security are two very essential requirements of any society. Just as certain penal measures are required to curb the excesses which an individual might commit against another individual or against a society, in similar manner, at times it becomes essential to use force to curb the insurgency of nations and countries. As long as peaceful measures are employed, and they become successful through negotiations and diplomatic ties, no one would endorse the use of power or force for curbing the insurgency of a nation. However, if peace talks fails, it is the inalienable right of humankind that these nations who become insurgent, they should be stopped and checked for this particular tendency of theirs. In the Sharia of the Almighty, we have the provision to check the insurgency of such nations, and in terminology, this is called jihad. In this session, we shall take a look at some of the important directives relating to jihad which are mentioned in the Quran. The first and foremost directive regarding jihad which is mentioned in the Quran is that all verses which mention jihad and which ask the Muslims to undertake jihad are addressed to them in their collective capacity. Only a state has the prerogative and the authority to declare and launch jihad. No person or group of people has this authority. Whenever jihad is to be launched, it has to take place at the state and country level. The second directive of jihad, which is mentioned in the Quran, is that today the sole basis of launching jihad is to curb oppression, injustice, and persecution of some other country, which it might commit on its own subjects or the subjects and citizens of some other country. Jihad cannot be undertaken to express or to annex other countries or to annex their riches or to propagate one's own point of view. It must be undertaken solely to curb and check oppression and injustice. The third directive regarding jihad, which is mentioned in the Quran, is that it never becomes obligatory on a Muslim nation or a warring Muslim nation unless and until their military might reaches a certain extent. In the times of the Prophet, in the later times of the Prophet, this military might was necessarily one half that of the enemy. Today, we can have important guidelines from this particular aspect of the Quran. And one thing which is certain from this is that Muslims should never become incumbent upon themselves in launching jihad until and unless their own military might is more than half than that of their enemy. The fourth directive of jihad, which is mentioned in the Quran, is that not participating in jihad only becomes a sin when a Muslim does not participate in this jihad at the call of the state, which in terminology is called nafir-e-am. Until and unless a Muslim stays back after this call, only then he will be called a person who has sinned in the eyes of God. Other than that, participating in jihad is a great blessing. It perhaps would earn great rewards for that person, but if he does not participate in jihad, he will not become a sinner in the eyes of the Almighty. The fifth directive of jihad, which is mentioned in the Quran, is that Muslims must not desert the battlefield once they enter the battlefield. Of course, this could be on the basis of some military strategy. However, showing cowardice or deserting the battlefield is a great sin in the eyes of the Almighty, and it actually amounts to showing distrust in the Almighty. The sixth directive of jihad, which is mentioned in the Quran, is that it must be undertaken under all ethical limits. Jihad cannot be undertaken in violation of moral and ethical limits. And perhaps the greatest of these limits is that one must not breach one's promises. And one very clear example which is mentioned in the Quran is that if a Muslim nation is in a treaty with another nation, and that particular nation actually is guilty of persecuting its Muslim subjects, and the other Muslim nation cannot wage jihad on that nation if this amounts to a breach of treaty. Similarly, the Muslim army must not tamper with people who are non-combatants or who want to remain impartial in jihad. The seventh directive of jihad, which is mentioned in the Quran, is that pomposity and show should be avoided by the Muslims. When they enter the battlefield, they should enter as humble servants of God. The eighth directive of jihad, which is mentioned in the Quran, is that what makes a Muslim army worthy of the help of God is resoluteness and steadfastness. They have to show forbearance and perseverance in the cause of God. The ninth directive, which is mentioned in the Quran regarding jihad, is that prisoners of war should be set free at all costs, whether through ransom or whether without ransom. They cannot be made slaves and they cannot be punished in any other way. However, the matter of war criminals is entirely different, and it is an entirely different category. Such people can be tried in a court of law and then punished on the verdict given by that court of law. The tenth directive of jihad is that the spoils of war are the right of a Muslim government, and it is on its discretion that if it wants to spend some money on the army or give the army that particular money, then it is allowed to do so. However, this money must be spent on the collective requirements of the Muslims in general. This discretion is that it can spend some amount or give some amount to the combating Muslim army also. These then are the 10 primary and major directives of jihad which are mentioned in the Quran. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.